My name is Grace. And back then, I was just a wild 19-year-old, fresh out of high school and dipping my toes into community college while waitressing at a diner in suburban Chicago. Dad was a truck driver, always on the road, hauling loads across the Midwest. Mom had passed when I was little. Breast cancer. The sneaky kind that hits hard and fast, so it was just me and him against the world. We'd moved into this cozy, split-level house in Oak Park after she died, trying to start fresh. It wasn't fancy, but it was ours, with a basement full of old boxes and Dad's collection of vinyl records that he swore were worth a fortune someday. Well, that particular weekend, Dad was out on a long haul to Kansas City, not due back till Monday. I'd been at a house party in Wrigleyville. I stumbled home around 2 a.m., tipsy but not wasted, craving something greasy to soak up the vodka cranberries. The house was dark, the street quiet except for the occasional car humming by. I kicked off my heels in the foyer, flicked on the kitchen light, and started rummaging for tortillas and cheese. Midnight quesadilla, my go-to comfort food since forever. As I heated the pan on the stove, I heard it. A cough. Not a loud one, but sharp, like someone trying to stifle it. It came from the basement stairs just off the kitchen. My heart jumped into my throat. "Hello?" I called out, my voice cracking a bit. No answer. I froze, listening. Then another sound, rustling, like papers being shuffled. Adrenaline hit me like a freight train. I grabbed the nearest thing, a wooden spoon, from the counter and yelled, "Who's there? I'm calling the cops!" But I didn't wait. I bolted for the front door, slamming it open and running barefoot into the cold night air, screaming at the top of my lungs. Neighbor's lights flickered on as I pounded on Mrs. Jones's door next door. By the time that the police arrived, the intruder was gone. They'd slipped out the back, over the chain-link fence into the alley. The cops found the basement window jimmied open, and inside, drawers pulled out, boxes overturned. Nothing major missing at first glance, just some cash from Dad's emergency stash and a few pieces of Mom's old jewelry. But the violation hit hard. I spent the rest of the night at Mrs. Jones, wrapped in a blanket, sipping tea while she patted my hand.
"You're safe now, Grace. These things happen, but you're tough, like your mom."
Dad rushed home the next day, his big rig parked crooked in the driveway. He enveloped me in one of his bear hugs.
"Grace, I'm so sorry I wasn't here. What the hell happened?"
I recounted it all, tears streaming. The police report was straightforward. Burglary, likely opportunistic. But Dad's face paled when he checked the locks.
"The front door key. It's the spare one Lucy had," he said, frowning. Lucy, his ex-girlfriend. They dated for about a year after Mom, but it ended messy 6 months back.
She was a real estate agent, all polished smiles and high heels. I'd never liked her. She always talked down to me like I was a kid, even though I was paying my own bills.
"Why would she still have a key?" I asked, my stomach twisting.
Dad rubbed his temples.
"I asked for it back, but she said she lost it. I changed the locks anyway, remember? But maybe she made a copy before that."
We reported it to the cops, but without proof, it was just suspicion. Life moved on, sort of. I started sleeping with a baseball bat under my bed, and Dad installed security cameras. It wasn't until 2 years later that the truth exploded like a grenade. I was 21 by then, living in my own apartment downtown. Dad had remarried, a sweet woman named Karen who actually treated me like family. One evening, he called me, his voice urgent.
"Grace, you gotta come over. It's about Lucy."
I drove out to Oak Park, heart pounding. Karen greeted me at the door, her eyes red-rimmed.
"Your dad's in the living room. This is insane."
Dad was pacing, a newspaper clipping in hand. Lucy's been arrested for burglary. But not just any. Her sister-in-law's house. And get this, it's the same MO as ours. I sank onto the couch.
What? How?
He handed me the article. Lucy had been caught red-handed breaking into her brother's wife's home in Naperville. The SIL, let's call her Emily, had come home early from a trip and found Lucy rifling through her clothes drawer. Emily screamed, Lucy bolted, but neighbors saw her car. When the cops searched Lucy's place, they found stolen items from multiple homes, including ours. Mom's pearl necklace, engraved with her initials.
But why? Why us? Why Emily?
Dad sat down heavily, his face ashen. The detectives called me. They pieced it together from her confession and the emails they subpoenaed. It's twisted, Grace. Bizarre as hell. Well, it turns out Lucy was a master manipulator with an evil vendetta that spanned years. When she met Dad at a real estate conference, he was looking to flip a property. She lied about her past, claimed she was divorced, childless, stable. But really? She was married, separated but not legally, and had a history of affairs. She seduced Dad for access. You see, Dad had confided in her about his rainy day fund. Not just cash, but bonds worth over 50 grand stashed in the basement safe. She gaslighted him constantly, making him doubt his memory.
"Oh, honey, you said you moved the safe last week,"
she'd say when he couldn't find something, planting seeds of confusion so he'd second-guess himself. Lucy had this fetish for control, using herself as a weapon. She'd manipulate Dad into role-playing scenarios where she'd confess fake secrets, getting him to reveal more about his assets under the guise of intimacy. One night, she whispered,
"Tell me where you'd hide something precious from me if I were a bad girl."
Dad, being a man, laughed and pointed to the basement. She stole the key that very week, duplicating it while he slept. It got weirder. Lucy wasn't robbing for money alone. Her ex-husband, Emily's brother, had left her after catching her in an affair. To get back, she targeted family members, starting with exes like Dad. She'd plant compromising items in the home she'd robbed. In our basement, cops later found a hidden USB drive with spicy photos of Lucy and Dad, but edited to look non-consensual, like he'd forced her. She planned to discover it later, blackmail him, gaslight him into thinking that he'd blacked out and forced things.
"Oh, you don't remember? You were so rough that night," she'd say, twisting his guilt.
With Emily, it was even more depraved. Lucy had seduced her own brother years ago, a one-night fling during a family reunion, blackout drunk. Emily knew, had forgiven the brother, but Lucy held the grudge. She broke in to steal Emily's toys collection, you know what I mean? Yeah, really. And replaced them with ones laced with her own scent, along with forged notes implying that Emily was cheating. Manipulation at its peak. Gaslight Emily into doubting her marriage, whispering lies to her brother like, "I saw Emily with someone. Maybe she's not faithful." Dad broke down as he told me.
I feel like a fool, Grace. She played me like a fiddle.
I hugged him tight.
"It's not your fault, Dad. She's a psycho."
But in the end, Lucy got the punishment she deserved. My name is Sue, and this happened a few years back when I lived alone in a small rental house with thin walls. That night, the sky was already mad. "Cool," I said to no one, watching the trees thrash outside my living room window.
love this energy. I had been doom-scrolling on my phone, half watching the weather app, half responding to DMs from people asking if the underwears that I was selling were actually worn by me. I was in my hustle era back then. Just me, Costco runs, limited edition colors, and strangers Venmoing me. My stomach cramped suddenly. Oh no, now? Really? I hustled to the bathroom, phone in hand. Light on, door half closed. Rain slammed the roof like it was personal. I sat down, finally relaxed, and that's when my body decided to betray me in a way that I was not spiritually prepared for. Full, violent, soul-leaving-the-body sneeze. And at that exact moment, the power went out. Total blackout. No glow from the hallway, no street light bleed, no LED anything. Just darkness, so thick it felt textured. I froze mid-existence. No, 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 no. I waved my hand in front of my face. Nothing. Oh my god, I'm blind. I myself blind. My heart started pounding like it was trying to escape my ribcage and move somewhere safer. I could hear the rain, my own breathing, the low hum of terror settling in. This cannot be how it ends. This is not my story. I fumbled for my phone. Dead. Of course it was dead, because why wouldn't it be? Okay. You're fine. You're just temporarily blind on a toilet. I reached to the side, knocking something over. What was that? I yelped. Why was there something there? I tried to remember where I kept the toilet paper. I had lived there for 2 years. 2 years! And yet, my brain had chosen this moment to factory reset. Left, I said. No, right. Definitely right. Or was it in the back? My hand brushed porcelain. Ah, yeah. Yes. Thank you, God. I completed the task with the focus of someone defusing a bomb. Every sound felt amplified. The flush echoed like a gunshot. I sat there afterward in complete darkness, fully convinced my life had split into a before and after. How do you even tell people this? I whispered. Do you open with it? Or ease them in? I imagined calling my mom.
Hey, sweetie, what's wrong?
Well, I sneezed while pooping, and now I'm blind. I imagined the group chat. Guys, emergency. Not medical. Bathroom related. My chest tightened. I don't even have good vision insurance. I sell tumblers on the internet. Time stretched. Seconds felt like minutes. Minutes felt like a lifetime. And then lightning cracked through the sky, flooding the hallway with white light for half a second. Just long enough for me to see the doorframe, the sink, reality. I gasped. Actually gasped.
Oh my god! I can see! I can see!
Another flash followed. Softer this time. Like the universe patting my head. I'm never sneezing again! I don't care if my nose explodes! I finished up, washed my hands in cold water, and stood there shaking, staring at my reflection in the mirror. You almost lost it all on a Tuesday. The power came back a few minutes later. The house hummed back to life like nothing had happened. No scars, no witnesses, just me and a story that sounded fake even to my own ears. I texted my friend later. Almost went blind tonight. She replied, "Huh?" I smiled, set my phone down, and decided some things were better left undocumented. My name's Alex. I was 22 at the time. I lived with my buddy Ryan, also 22, who worked at a record store downtown and spent most of his free time playing guitar like his life depended upon it. We'd been doing fine splitting rent three ways until our third roommate, Derek, pulled the classic college guy move. Announced that he was studying abroad for the summer, packed his and vanished without helping find a replacement. Ryan and I figured we'd eat the extra cost for a month or two, put up an ad on Craigslist, and move on. Then, one afternoon, I got home from work, and there was a woman standing in our kitchen like she had lived there forever. She was maybe mid-30s. "Who the hell are you?" I asked, setting my keys down harder than necessary. She turned, startled, and then gave me this awkward half-smile. "Oh, hey, I'm Tara. Derek subleased the room to me. He said it was cool with you guys." I stared. Derek didn't say shit to us. Ryan walked in from the hallway, guitar pick still between his teeth. "What's going on, man?" "This is Tara. Apparently, Derek rented out his room behind our backs." Ryan blinked a few times, then shrugged. "Well, if she's paying rent, I guess we're good. Hi, Tara, I'm Ryan." She nodded quickly.
"Thanks. I'm between jobs right now, but I'll get it sorted. Promise."
We should have known better. Red flags were flapping in a hurricane. But we were young, and we didn't want the drama of eviction notices, so we let her stay. Now, the first couple of weeks weren't terrible. She mostly stayed in her room, door closed. And then the music started. Heavy, distorted riffs and thumping bass at all hours. 2 p.m., 3 a.m., didn't matter. The walls were paper thin. I could feel the vibration in my bed. I'd bang on her door. "Tara, turn that shit down. Some of us have to work tomorrow." She'd crack the door an inch.
"Oh, sorry, Alex. Didn't realize. I'll lower it."
She never did. She'd barely left during daylight. I'd see her slip out around midnight and then come back at sunrise with takeout bags or nothing at all. Then the guys started showing up. Rough-looking dudes, tattoos crawling up their necks, the kind who make you double-check the deadbolt. They'd stay for hours. Sometimes I'd hear low, tense voices through the wall. Sometimes laughter that didn't sound happy. Once, I walked past her door and I saw things that I can't describe here, but trust me, it was not normal. Ryan and I just looked at each other across the living room.
"Jesus, you think she's turning tricks in there?"
"I don't know what the hell she's doing," I said, "but it's getting weird." We tried talking to her once, over cheap pizza that we ordered in order to clear the air. "Hey, Tara, look, we're not trying to be morons, but the music at all hours, the late night visitors, it's messing with our heads." She picked at the crust, eyes on the table.
"I get it. I'm sorry. It's been rough. Lost my job. X took everything. These guys, they're just friends helping me out."
"Helping how?" Ryan asked, leaning forward.
"Just stuff. Don't worry about it." She forced a smile. "So, Ryan, you play guitar? That's cool. I used to mess around with one back in the day."
Ryan lit up. He's a sucker for anyone who shows interest in music.
"Yeah, man. Got a Fender Strat and a Martin Acoustic in my room. Been collecting pedals and picks forever."
I shot him a look like don't get cozy, but he was already talking shop. About a month in, things went from sketchy to absolutely messed up. Ryan came home one evening looking like someone had punched him in the gut.
"Bro, my guitars are gone."
I froze. "What do you mean, gone?"
"Both of them, Strat and acoustic. Left them in my room this morning, came back from my shift, nothing."
We tore the house apart. Nothing. Tara's door was locked, music blasting again. We pounded on it. "Tara, open the damn door." It took forever, but she finally opened it, eyes bloodshot.
"What?"
"Where are my guitars?" Ryan demanded.
I don't know what you're talking about," she said, arms crossed.
"Cut the b-," I snapped. "No one else has been in here."
She tried every excuse in the book for 20 solid minutes.
"Maybe you left them somewhere. Could have been someone else. I heard noises outside yesterday."
Finally, she broke.
"Fine, okay. I pawned them. Power bill was due. I was short. I was going to buy them back when I got money."
"Money from what? You don't have a job. And rent's due in 3 days. You telling me you won't have that either?"
She sank onto the bed, tears starting.
"No, I don't.
things are bad, really bad. Look, just don't call the cops, please.
Ryan's face was stone. You stole from me.
My livelihood, my sh**.
She begged.
Guys, come on. I've been through hell. It's an abusive ex. No family. Have some mercy.
I felt that little tug. That part of you that wants to believe that people can change. But no. Not this time. Mercy doesn't bring guitars back, Tara. We called the non-emergency line. Explained the theft. They said that we would need an official report to recover anything from the pawn shop. Two officers arrived within the hour. Tara was in her room, frantically stuffing clothes into duffel bags. We heard zippers and curses. The cops knocked. Ma'am? Police, open the door. She came out, luggage in hand, face pale.
What's going on?
Just need to talk about some reported stolen property. The female officer said evenly.
Tara glanced at us, then back at her bags. As she started down the stairs, she turned with this weird, half-joking smile.
Don't take any of my shit, all right?
We waited in the living room. A few minutes later, the male cop came back in. She's got an active warrant out of Round Rock. Same MO. Theft, pawning stolen goods. We're taking her in. Ryan let out a shaky laugh.
Holy
What about her stuff? I asked. Up to you guys. She won't be back tonight. After they cuffed her and loaded her into the squad car, her yelling, "This is the whole way down the driveway," we stood there, staring at the mess she'd left behind. Curbside? Ryan asked. Curbside, I said. We dragged everything out. Ratty duffels, a cracked laptop, random smelly clothes. Neighbors peeked from porches, but we didn't care. It felt like taking our house back. Next morning, armed with the police report, Ryan got both guitars back from the pawn shop on South Congress. They had a few new scratches, but they played. We changed the locks that same day and posted a new ad. This time, with background checks and references required. Derek got a very angry group text. Turns out, he had pocketed the sublease money and ghosted. If you are watching this, my friends, trust your gut, vet your roommates, and never underestimate how fast a quiet house can turn into chaos. I remember it like it was yesterday, even though it's been over two decades. Back in 2002, I was 23 with a certificate in welding, and I had just landed my first real job at this gritty shop in the industrial part of Michigan, Warren. The pay wasn't great, but it was enough to get me out of my parents' basement and into my own apartment. I was so proud. It felt like freedom. Like I was finally adulting. And that's where I met Jake. He was this massive guy, probably 6'4 and built like a linebacker. He never talked much about his time in Core. We worked the same shift, grinding away at metal frames for auto parts. And then, one day, after clocking out, his truck wouldn't start.
"Yo, brother, you headed east? Mind giving a big dumb Marine a ride?"
He grinned, breath fogging in the cold. I laughed. "Hop in, big dumb Marine." That ride turned into every night. We'd blast Slipknot or Old Cash, stop at Kroger for a 12-pack, and then end up at his mom's little ranch house where Rita would have biscuits and gravy waiting like we were still growing boys. Rita was a saint. Cigarette rasp, bleach blonde hair, and she'd shove a plate at you before you even got your coat off.
"Eat, both of you. You're skin and bones,"
she'd say, even though Jake was built like a refrigerator. One night in March, Jake cracked his fourth beer and said,
"Man, this commuting shit is killing me. Why don't I just crash at your place? Split rent 50-50. Save us both money."
I didn't even think twice.
"Hell yeah,
Move in tomorrow. Biggest mistake of my 20s. The first month was actually fun. We'd get home, shower off the slag and sweat, pound beers, and Jake would fire up his screaming Dell and jump into Yahoo voice chants. Dude would argue with me about Halo 2 until 3 in the morning.
You're trash, man! I'd punch you in real life!
He'd scream into the headset, laughing like a maniac. I'd yell, tell him he'll piss on his motherboard, and we'd lose it. And then the switch flipped. He started calling in sick. I'd drag my ass to work alone and then come home to him passed out in his boxers, an empty case of Bush on the floor, and puke dried on the coffee table. One time I walked in and the living room smelled like a urinal cake exploded. Jake, what the hell, man? I kicked his foot. He lifted his head, eyes unfocused.
I don't know, brother. I must have spilled something.
There was a puddle of piss in the corner and a half-eaten Domino's face down on my couch. I almost threw up myself out the window. You gotta get a handle on this. You're wrecking the place.
Oh, I got it.
He'd mumble, hungover and sorry. Next day, same shit, new case. It escalated fast. One night, he put his fist through the drywall because some teenager online called him a washed-up jarhead. Another night, I came home and he was screaming at the TV, swinging a golf club at shadows. Jake, put the damn club down! He turned, swaying, eyes black.
You gonna make me, little man?
Now, I'm 6'1", 210, but he had 4 inches and 70 pounds on me. I backed off. Slept with my door locked and a knife under the pillow after that. I told him flat out, you've got till the end of the month to get out. He laughed in my face.
I pay half the rent, bitch. Try and evict me.
A couple weeks later, I came home from overtime, and the apartment door was kicked in. Cops. Turns out Jake had gone to a bar on 8 Mile, got in a fight over a pool game, and cracked some dude's orbital with a cue stick. Felony assault. They hauled him off in cuffs while I stood there in my greasy coveralls, thanking God out loud. His mom, Rita, showed up the next day, crying, packing his shit in trash bags.
I'm so sorry, honey. I didn't know it was this bad.
It's okay, Miss Rita. Just get him out of my life. I thought that was the end. Until 3 a.m. 2 months later.
Open up! It's Jake! I got nowhere to go!
I looked through the peephole. He looked like a scarecrow that lost a fight with a lawnmower. Get the hell away from my door before I call the cops again!
Come on, man! One night! I'm sober, I swear!
I dialed 911. Cops came, dragged him off for violating the no-contact order that the judge slapped on him. That was the last time I saw him in person. Well, fast forward 20-plus years. I'd done 2 hours in the sandbox with a defense contractor, married a German girl that I met in Stuttgart, had 3 kids, moved back to Michigan when her mom got sick. One night last fall, I'm doom-scrolling Facebook at 1 a.m. because jet lag still owns me, and his name pops up in People You May Know. Jake Harlan. Profile pic? Him in a polo shirt, arms crossed, smiling clean. Cover photo? Him accepting some certificate. I clicked. Bio said, 8 years sober, peer recovery coach, training to be a CADC. The hell? I sent a message. Big Jake? That you, man? He replied in like 30 seconds. Holy shit! Brother? How you living? We ended up on Messenger for 3 hours. Man, I owe you the biggest apology on planet Earth, he typed. I was a goddamn animal back then.
I don't even remember half the shit I did to you, but I know I pissed in your corners, puked on your couch, threatened you.
I'm ashamed.
I laughed. Actually laughed. Yeah, you were a walking disaster, dude. Scared the shit out of me.
Well, AA and jail saved my life. After that last arrest, I woke up dope sick in county, crying. Mom dragged me to a meeting. Been clean ever since. Now I work at the very same treatment center that pulled me out the gutter. I help guys that used to be me.
Oh, that's badass, Jake. Proud of you, brother.
Tried finding you years ago to make amends. Step 9, you know? Never could track you down.
Well, you found me now. We talked about Rita. She passed in 2019. And those biscuits and gravy we used to scarf down. He sent me a picture of his new rescue pit bull named Biscuit. I sent him one of my kids holding fish up at Lake St. Clair. At the end, he wrote, "If you ever forgive me, I'd love to buy you a coffee sometime. If not, I get it. Just know I'm sorry from the bottom of my soul."
I always thought marriage was about partnership, about sharing burdens and joys equally. But as the year dragged on, my perception of it shattered like glass under a sledgehammer. It started with a series of unfortunate events. Surgery in January, followed by thousands of dollars in car repairs. College consumed my days, and I worked full time to keep us afloat. Anxiety gnawed at my insides, forcing me onto medication. Amidst all this chaos, housework became an unbearable weight. I did everything, cleaning, cooking, laundry, while my husband blissfully ignored the messes he created. 2 weeks ago, I made a decision. I would stop cleaning up after him. If he was content living in squalor, then so be it. I would clean only after myself. Trash I produced was thrown away. My dishes were washed. My laundry was done. His mess, however, was left untouched. Today was no different. My husband slept until 1 p.m., despite having to be at work at 8. Meanwhile, I had worked from 8:30 to 6:30. When I got home, the kitchen table was a disaster. The trash hadn't been taken out, despite his promise to do so. The bag of takeout he left on the floor had been torn apart by the cats. Clean clothes and towels were strewn across the ground. I was livid. I cleaned my own messes, put away my belongings, and washed only my clothes. His laundry remained on the floor, where he had carelessly tossed it. Dried up cat puke, 3 piles of it, dotted the floor. Remnants from weeks ago that he ignored as he stepped over them. Usually I would have cleaned them, but not anymore. I decided to see how long it would take him to address the mess. I guessed it would be another week or two, even though we had the next 2 days off. Oddly enough, my anxiety lessened. With only my own mess to manage, I had time to relax. The house was dirtier, but I didn't care. If we each cleaned up after ourselves and shared household duties, life would be simpler. He came home after a 5-hour shift and asked if I wanted to go out to eat. He didn't know that there was chicken thawing in the fridge that needed to be cooked, and he certainly didn't offer to cook it. Instead, he retreated to the game room. I waited, thinking he'd notice the laundry or the clutter on the table. He didn't. He didn't think about mailing the rent check or making dinner, even though I'd worked 9 hours and was dealing with my second period of the month. The resentment bubbled within me, a boiling cauldron of anger and frustration. I felt trapped in a prison of neglect and indifference. My once loving husband had become a stranger, a careless, oblivious man who took everything for granted. One evening, as I lay in bed, an idea crept into my mind. It was dark and insidious, but it took root and grew. If he wouldn't notice the everyday messes, perhaps he wouldn't notice something more sinister.
Over the next few days, I began to plan. I moved through the house with purpose, but my husband remained oblivious. He continued his routine of work and gaming, never questioning my newfound calm or the strange glint in my eye. I started small. I bought a set of rubber gloves and a few bottles of bleach. I disposed of the cat puke, scrubbing the floor clean, but I left the gloves and bleach conspicuously in the corner. He didn't ask about them. My opportunity came one Saturday morning. My husband was asleep, as usual, while I cleaned the kitchen. I found a sharp knife, the kind that could cut through bone with ease, and hid it under the sink. I made sure to leave no traces, no fingerprints. I felt a cold, calculating detachment as I prepared. That night, I suggested we watch a movie together, something we hadn't done in months. He agreed, surprised by my sudden affection. As the credits rolled, I offered to make us a late-night snack. He smiled, oblivious to the darkness in my heart. I returned with two glasses of wine. He sipped his without hesitation. Within minutes, he was unconscious. The sedative I'd slipped into his drink worked quickly. I dragged his limp body to the bathroom, my muscles burning with effort. I placed him in the bathtub, his head lulling to one side. The knife glinted under the harsh bathroom light. I felt a rush of adrenaline as I picked it up. I thought about the months of neglect, the endless chores, the piles of cat puke. My anger surged, blinding me to the horror of what I was about to do. With a steady hand, I made the first cut. Blood poured from the wound, staining the white tub. I worked methodically, my mind detached from my actions. The sound of the blade slicing through flesh and bone was sickening, but I didn't stop. I couldn't stop. Hours passed. I was drenched in sweat and blood, my body aching from the effort. I looked down at what remained of my husband, now unrecognizable. I felt a strange sense of satisfaction, a twisted sense of justice. I had freed myself from his neglect, his indifference. I cleaned the bathroom meticulously, scrubbing away every trace of blood. I disposed of the knife and the rubber gloves, careful not to leave any evidence. I packed the remains into black trash bags and carried them to the basement, where I hid them behind old boxes and forgotten junk. For the next few days, I lived in a state of surreal calm. My husband's absence was hardly noticed by anyone. He had few friends, no close family. At work, they assumed he'd taken off without notice, something he'd done before. I carried on with my routine, maintaining the facade of a grieving wife. But the calm didn't last. Guilt and paranoia began to eat away at me. I saw shadows moving in the corners of my vision, heard whispers in the dead of night. The house, once a sanctuary, became a haunted prison. I felt his presence everywhere, a cold, accusing gaze that never left me. One night, as I lay in bed, I heard a noise from the basement. A soft, shuffling sound, like someone moving among the boxes. My heart pounded in my chest as I crept downstairs, clutching a flashlight. The basement was dark and musty, the air thick with dust. I swept the beam of light across the room, my breath coming in short, ragged gasps. The black trash bags were untouched, but the noise continued. I moved closer, my hands trembling. The sound grew louder, more distinct. It was a whisper, a voice I recognized. "You can't hide from me," it said. "You'll never be free." I screamed, dropping the flashlight. The basement plunged into darkness. I stumbled back, tripping over the debris, my mind racing with fear. I knew then that I could never escape the weight of my actions. My husband's neglect had driven me to madness, and now I was trapped in a nightmare of my own making. Days turned into weeks. The whispers never stopped. The shadows never left. I became a prisoner in my own home, tormented by the ghost of my husband. My mind unraveled, the line between reality and nightmare blurring until I could no longer tell the difference. One evening, unable to bear the torment any longer, I made my way to the basement one final time. The darkness enveloped me, the air thick with the scent of decay. I found the black trash bags, untouched, and knelt beside them.
"I'm sorry,"
I whispered, tears streaming down my face.
"I'm so sorry."
The whispers grew louder, a cacophony of accusations and condemnation. I clutched my head, the guilt and madness consuming me. In a final act of desperation, I reached for the knife that I had hidden under a pile of rags. With a swift, final motion, I ended my torment. The darkness embraced me, the whispers fading into silence. I felt a cold, eerie peace as I slipped away, knowing that I could never escape the weight of my actions. In the end, my husband's neglect had destroyed us both. The house, once a home, became a tomb of madness and despair. And I, a ghost trapped in the darkness, paid the ultimate price for my descent into horror.